Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today here on WIPR. You can give us a call, 410-662-8780. Topics today, mushrooms. Oh, how I love thee.
Mm-hmm.
And Italian wine.
One of my favorite, yeah. And both exciting topics. I love mushrooms. They're one of my favorite. People often ask me what one of my favorite things to cook is, and I can't help but say mushrooms. They're just one of the best things ever.
You're living dangerously this morning.
I have to constant, what?
You're living dangerously.
How so?
You cut me off when I was talking about Italian wine. It's not safe.
Whatever.
It's like not safe.
I'm always living dangerously around you, Tony. So Italian wine.
I heard you got knives.
What about, yeah, you know it. Lots of them and they're sharp. So what about Italian wine?
I was just going to speak of my affection for Italian wines.
Mm-hmm.
I had someone ask me last night, who I've talked to a great deal about French wine in the past, I was talking to about Italian wine,
mm-hmm.
and they looked at me with a suspicious, very suspicious look, like you've been cheating, pal, you know? Like, no, I love them both very, very much. I love, mm-hmm. if the wine is great, I'm going to love the wine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I'm an equal opportunity fine wine appreciator.
So,
consumer.
Do you have particular wines in Italy that you're thinking about right now?
I mean, does something exist besides Barolo?
Well, for I don't know. Well, yes, Barolo.
I wanted to start with mushrooms.
Okay.
I just thought you were being a little bit edgy. I thought you were being edgy and cutting me off.
Oh my gosh.
We'll get to Italian wines. Things to give us a call about: your favorite mushroom dish you ever made or ate.
Tune in and listen to Tony and I fight.
Yeah, that's why they tune in. Maybe your favorite Italian wine that you ever had. If you have a particular question on the topic, give us a ring.
Mm-hmm. What are your mushrooms that you love?
And you can
mushroom dishes.
Email us if you want. It's foremanwolf@wipr.org, or call us 410-662-8780.
So, Tony, do you know what the secret is to cooking mushrooms properly?
I'm desperate to hear
your
version.
I thought you might be. My version? No. The way it is, Tony. It's the way it is.
Yes.
Okay, so the way it is. You have to make
Cindy
a decision
came down
about,
the mountain with two
you have
tablets.
To make a decision yeah. about whether or not you're going to wash them or not, or you're going to brush them with a little brush, or you're going to rub them with a towel, or you're just going to look at them and say, oh, these are clean enough. So you have to make, that's your first decision, because mushrooms are like sponges, and they absorb water like crazy. So water doesn't taste like anything. Well, hopefully your water doesn't taste like anything. Unfortunately, right now mine does, but that's beside the point. And so if you don't want them to absorb water, so if you are going to wash them, it better be quick. And sometimes, you know, they when they're cultivated, they'll often come in with, you know, some pieces of dirt on them. So really brushing them is the best way to handle it. And then when you're cooking them, the whole fact is that because they have a high water content naturally, is that you need to work that water out. So as you cook them, you can cook them, you know, on medium to high heat, but you want them to the water to evaporate.
They have to move. They can't.
Yeah, you work on the mushrooms that we make for one of the dishes that I've made for a very, very long time, which is for wild rockfish, which is a oyster. Well, right now we're using maitake, oyster and button mushrooms, to make this fricassee that we serve with the rockfish. It takes about almost 18 to 20 minutes to cook these mushrooms properly. It takes a long time. It's a labor of love, and it's well worth the effort. Now, you don't want to take them so far that you've in the cooking process that you've suddenly turned your fresh mushrooms into dried mushrooms. That's not the you know, you want them to have some level of caramelization, some level of color, and an intensity of flavor and a great texture, but don't take them too far. It's always one of those lessons that I, you know, have with cooks when I'm training someone, is when I say something and I'm very emphatic about it and I'm very clear, if I don't stand over them and watch them do it, then they're not going to understand exactly what I want. So it is a little bit hard to convey this verbally, but if you use good common sense, you'll realize that you've gone too far with them. So don't take them that far, but in the cooking process. But yeah, you want to work that water content out. And each mushroom has a different water content. Button mushrooms have a ton of water in them. You know, something like a maitake or an oyster have far less, and they really don't take that long to cook. You can probably caramelize those in 6 or 7 minutes.
There's some mushrooms when you're getting them out of the woods, like morels or you know, or maitakes if you're getting, you know, or the other name for those is Anne of the Woods. I think they get called sheep's head too sometimes. But those guys, there's always little bits of sand or twigs, all kinds of rocks, forest floor,
basically. Yeah, there's going to be bugs in there too, and probably some worms.
And I know with porcinis.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're always fastidious about splitting them in half and making sure that they're not...
Yeah, that they don't have worms in them. Sorry, but that's what they are. And yeah, that's the thing about
wild... I love
porcinis.
I don't love worms.
They're disgusting. And that's one of the first times I worked with porcini mushrooms. I was just absolutely horrified. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't even stand this. I think I saw the first worm and I threw them away. I can't handle this.
The closer they are from being gathered to being used.
Well, and also
the less development you can see like that.
And the other thing too is that was probably almost 20 years ago, the first time I worked with a porcini. I mean, the purveyors all realize now that, you know, this is a problem. You know, when I first started, well, that wasn't when I first started cooking, but 20 years ago, there weren't so many things available to us. Things were not as available as they are today. So
it was amazing just to be offered porcini mushrooms.
Exactly, and purveyors were learning what they were dealing with as well. So they didn't know they should cut them open before they sent them out, you know, and then they would know that they had, you know, parasites in them or worms or whatever. So that's what they do now. Almost always you get a porcini cut in half when you get them.
Well, we did not then see the people who just gathered mushrooms and showed up at your back door.
Well, that's true, too. Exactly.
Which is one of the coolest things in the world.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's amazing.
If you want to be popular with the chef, show up at the back door with all the, you know, morels that you find in the spring or girolles in the summertime.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, I mean, there are just so many things you can do with mushrooms.
Let's go to a call. We've got Christina in Sparks Holding. Christina, how are you?
Hi, Christina. How are you today?
Hi, I think this would apply to mushrooms as well. Do you use garlic with your mushrooms?
Sometimes.
A lot of the time.
So I love garlic, and I get it from a local CSA, Calvert's Gift, that grows a lot of organic garlic.
They do good work.
Yeah, they do.
And I've heard several things. Recently I learned that you need to chop your garlic before, like 5 minutes before you put it on heat, or it inactivates the enzyme alanase, which then doesn't let the best goodness of the garlic in terms of health benefits come through. But recently, I heard a chef say that in order to get the most from your garlic, you should squish it, because if you just mince it with a knife, it sort of seals itself up right again and doesn't give you as much flavor. So what can you say about the best way to use garlic? And if you're doing it with mushrooms, would you add it early on, or would you add it later? And number two, I didn't hear you mention what you're cooking the mushrooms in. Oil, olive oil, dry pan?
Okay, so there's a million answers to those questions for me, right? There is no one answer to what you just said. It depends on the mushroom it depends on the dish as to what I'm cooking my mushrooms in. Oftentimes, I cook my mushrooms in butter, but not always. Butter has a water content as well. So it all depends on what flavor I'm looking for. Maybe I'm doing a salad. If I'm doing a salad, I may cook it in a light oil. If I'm cooking mushrooms for a piece of fish, I may cook them in butter. But one of the things about, you asked a couple of different questions. One of the things about garlic is that we typically do our prep and make our food. I mean, I don't let garlic sit in the walk-in. It's not chopped and sitting in there. You know, and you also asked a question about when do you add garlic to the mushrooms. And one of the big things for me about cooking garlic is that I do not want it to brown. And so therefore, if you're cooking mushrooms, which may take quite a few, you know, many minutes, you want to cook that garlic or add it at the end. And oftentimes I will butter poach my garlic so that it's cooked very gently. It's ready to go. And I can literally toss it in my pan to season the mushrooms. They never have to go. That way it never goes into a hot pan where it has the chance to burn. So my answer is I add butter poached garlic at the end off the heat to my mushrooms if I'm adding it.
Got it. And what about squishing versus chopping garlic?
I love that you're using squishing as a culinary term.
That's awesome. It's excellent. Love it, too.
Only on Sunday. A lot of people, you see it a lot in Asian cuisine, and I've seen a lot of Italian cooks. They will very fresh garlic that has really good juice, because that's kind of what you're chasing. And I know for me, that's what I'm chasing. If you crush it with a French knife under your hand, relatively flat, not incredibly flat, but relatively flat, put a lot of juice on the cutting board, and you can mince that, you know, you can brunoise the garlic right there on the cutting board in that juice, and instead of the pieces resealing like you talked about, they tend to be coated in that juice, and use your knife to scrape that juice right off the board. That's the important part of that.
Yeah, well, you know, also, you remember, I don't know if you're old, I don't know how old you are, but back in the day, they used to make Caesar's, okay, they used to make Caesar salad in wooden salad bowls, right? And they would crush the garlic right in the bowl. And that's exactly why Tony just told you why.
Yeah, because I used to have to make that at the Governor's Club years ago.
Yeah, that's super cool. I love Caesar salad made like that. And that's why, because all that amazing flavor goes into that bowl, and you're basically just seasoning the bowl, and you're making this amazing, you know, a la minute dressing. Yeah. And that's good stuff.
Yeah, we used to make a paste with that lemon and the salt.
Mm,
and then
yummy.
Crush completely, and then rub the entire bowl down, and then make the rest of the dressing, make the salad.
Oh, so good.
And then toss everything.
It's so good when it's made that way.
It's a lot of smelly people who are happy eating that salad.
Well, and also, when I had Italian class, I went to the Culinary Institute of America, and my chef was probably in his 80s, and I was in culinary school in the mid-80s, so this was quite some time ago, and he was, oh my gosh, he made this dish where he stuffed shrimp with, we would crush the garlic on the cutting board with salt, and I've talked about this recently, and he added paprika to it and a little bit of lemon juice, and we would make this absolutely total mixture on the board, all crushed garlic, and then add a tiny bit of breadcrumb and butterfly the shrimp, good-sized shrimp like you 12s or U15s, and stuff it with this and broil them. Oh my gosh, those were so good. I could eat that right now. Simple, but delicious.
That is the delicious 80s kind of shrimp dish.
Yeah, right? It's so 80s. Yeah.
Christina, thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, good
in.
To talk with you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Have a good
conversation.
Aw, it was. Have a good Sunday.
So you can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org. And when we come back on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine, I want to know your top three mushrooms.
Me?
And your favorite preparation
for
those.
Me or the people?
But
you're pointing at me.
I want to know everything about what they like about mushrooms okay. and the mushrooms, yeah. but I am pointing at you.
My top three mushrooms? Oh, boy, that's going to be hard.
Favorite three, you can't say truffles. I know it's a mushroom. You can't say truffles.
All right.
And what is your single favorite thing to eat with those particular mushrooms?
Okay. No problem.
All of that and more on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman the Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. It's mushrooms and an Italian wine.
Oh, yeah, it is.
And we have, from the Apple program, we have an email back from our...
Yeah, I'm glad she
told
us what
happened. Our creme brulee apple tart person. We asked her to let us know, and she's awesome. So Rachel sent us a note back, and it sent us a number of
notes about her.
Notes and some photographs, and it looks like she did really nice
work.
Yeah,
it looked good. I want one.
The tart came out very tasty, but not enough apple flavor. It's good to be self-critical as a cook, Rachel. I sliced the Honeycrisp apples super thin and patted them dry with paper towels before lining the bottom of the crust with them, pre-baked with egg white wash. I have celiac disease, so use white rice flour, sweet brown rice flour, brown sugar, and egg for that crust.
Which is good to know.
I used an amazing dark maple syrup that I got at the Sugarloaf Craft Festival to flavor the cream. Some of the apples floated to the top and some kind of melted into the crust, but the crust managed to stay very crisp. The apples are browned on the top. Tasted amazing, especially after getting torched with the sugar. The only thing I would change is adding more apples, a thinner crust bottom, and a shorter baking time. We were so worried about it not setting, I let it go longer than I should have, so it was stiffer than I would have liked.
Okay.
Still tasted amazing. It looked
great.
It's
always
pretty.
A process when you're making pastry. That's good. Good for her. She's brave enough to give it a try.
Rachel, I wonder.
Awesome, Rachel.
I wonder if patting those apples is what got you in trouble a little bit. And, you know, using some of that juice. I wonder if that just, but that's.
All right. Good job,
thought.
Rachel. Thanks.
Good thought. We have a call, looks like about Italian wine, from Pat in Baltimore. Pat, go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air, Pat.
Hi. This is Pastor Bert here. I told the fellow that preempted this thing that I wanted to share a thing which I'm reluctant to, but there is a wine. It is the least expensive wine in the world. It's Italian. It is bottled by the Venice Growers Association, and it's a Montepulciano wine. Montepulciano, I guess it is. And it's red and white. The red is what I use. And it's like $7 a bottle for a 1.5. A lot of restaurants buy it by the case. And I can't tell you where you get it, but it's called Entree.
Well, thanks, Pat. That sounds like a great value, great tip.
Okay. Well, God bless. Take care.
Thanks, Pat.
So much. Bye.
Have a good Sunday.
See, I love when someone's passionate about wine.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's cool.
If anyone else has a favorite Italian wine or a little buying tip, I'm sure listeners would love to hear it.
Absolutely.
But anyway, we were on mushrooms and we were talking about favorite mushrooms. But it's really, I mean, honestly, it's nice to cook all kinds of mushrooms, but I have my favorites that I like to eat.
Oh, me too, but I like almost every single mushroom that exists, so you just asked me to it down to three.
Yeah,
it's going to be give hard.
Me, so
okay.
You show me yours, I'll show you mine, okay?
I would prefer that you did not.
You give me your number three, I'll give you my number three, and so on.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so I'm trying to keep it to at least one that's not expensive. So button mushrooms. I mean, honestly, they are one of the best mushrooms ever. And I can do a gajillion different things with button mushrooms. I do love porcinis. I do love morels. So, you know, they're both wild, a little harder to get. But you asked me for my top three. I can't help but say those.
So favorite button mutton prepper? Button mutton.
Okay, I make...
Button mushroom.
my absolute favorite thing, and this comes from way back when, at my grandmother's like 70th birthday party, I had mushroom soup for the first time. Actually, my cousin also went to the Culinary Institute of America. He's a good bit older than me. Sorry, Joe. But he was a chef long before I was. And I remember going. He was the one that did the dinner for my grandma. And the mushroom soup was just ridiculously good. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So when I started cooking, I'm like, I was determined to figure out how he made that thing. And so I make mushroom bisque, and it's actually quite simple. But you have to realize, you know, again, you have to realize getting the full flavor of the mushroom. So you saute onions and shallots and butter, add a nice amount of button mushrooms. I usually chop them roughly on my board. I mean, you're going to end up pureeing the soup, so it doesn't matter, you know, really. But you want to allow them to release some of their moisture. So if you chop them roughly, it helps that to happen. And also remember, when you're cooking in a pot rather than a slope-sided, low-sided saute pan, let's say, that all the steam, a lot of the steam is captured, not all of it, but a lot of the steam is captured in that pot. So the water that's being given off and is evaporating is actually sort of being captured in there. If you're sauteing the mushrooms in a saute pan, they're going to cook faster. They're going to caramelize faster. So I often will do my mushrooms separately in a saute pan and then add them to the soup pot. So I'm actually doing two things at once, which is also making it faster. And I like to do everything as quickly as possible because I have a lot of work to do.
Because you have no attention span.
No, because I have a lot of work to do. And so I saute the onions and shallots and butter in my soup pot. And meanwhile, I'm cooking my button mushrooms with a little bit of salt. I use kosher salt in butter. And they're working up to the point of being caramelized. Then I add them to the pot. I add heavy cream. I put Boal Madeira in, and that's your fault. I love the Madeiras that we have, that you have taught me about, and that I have at my fingertips to use. How available is Boal Madeira, Tony? Can they get it anywhere?
Reasonably.
I mean, that's easy. Okay. So
reasonably. You just want a five-year-old Boal. Boal is one of the relatively sweeter ones.
Thank you. So that Madeira is so gorgeous. I love the natural sort of caramelized tone of the Madeira. I love the way it smells. It's like perfume to me in a good way. It's sort of nutty and just absolutely gorgeous. So that is what perfumes my soup. I don't need anything else in there. I put chicken stock in, but I don't have to, and you don't have to. So I put a tiny bit of reduced chicken stock in. Literally, we always have it on hand, so it's actually chicken and veal stock reduced down to a gloss. So I may put a couple tablespoons of that in. I mean, it's dark, it's rich, it's
kind of gives you a base note.
Yeah, it does. And then, but you can omit it if you want to. You can also omit the alcohol if you want to, but just make sure you season it well with salt and pepper. Simple. And then I used to puree it in the food processor. And one of the things I like about pureeing it in the food processor is that it gives the mushroom texture, which I love. And then we started doing it in the blender. So you can do it either way. You're going to get two totally different soups. Pureed in a blender. It's velvety. It's almost aerated on the palate. It's so beautiful. And that's gorgeous. Or you can do it in the food processor and have that kind of really cool texture. It's fine, but it's still texture. And that's it. So that's one thing.
Yeah, we're going to take a caller who I think is on your channel. Sandy and Severn, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Oh, simple. Mushrooms, a little butter, cook them down, salt and pepper, splash of wine. Perfection.
I agree. Perfect.
Chop them up if you need to, but after you cook them. Yeah.
So what's your favorite mushroom to do this with?
I will take almost anything, but truthfully, the white buttons.
Yeah, I'm just, the white you just buttons. Basically
I've had,
duplicated what I just said.
All sorts of olive. I've lived over around the world. We talked about Germany before, in France. But whatever you have, whatever's available, just take those, chop them, you know, slice them up, a little bit of butter. Okay, I got to go get some mushrooms now.
Okay.
All right, Sandy. Thanks,
Sandy.
Bye.
Bye.
All right.
Let's go ahead and take Dave in Baltimore. Dave, go ahead.
Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Saffron and truffles.
Mm-hmm.
The saffron,
you have expensive taste, Dave.
A giant, let's say. I assume it's stale because as expensive as it is, I get very little color and no taste. I put it on paella. Now, truffles, where can I go to taste truffles? I've never tasted them. Do I go to a restaurant or order them on the internet? Oh, two items that I'm curious about.
Oh, I love that. You have talked about two of my very favorite things.
Oh, yeah.
I would tell you there's two different types of saffron that are pretty readily available. Well, no, I'm sorry. One's readily available. One isn't. I use saffron from Spain in my, I make a lobster soup with curry in it, and we also put saffron in. I know that wholesale, I pay anywhere from $65 to $85 an ounce for it. So, try and find saffron where it is fresh. You don't want it to sit around. I mean, it can be really moist and gorgeous. And the other thing is I have a friend that brings me Iranian saffron, and saffron from Persia is absolutely intense and gorgeous and is really the best saffron I've ever worked with. So
where can I get it?
You can get it on the internet. You'll find it somewhere on the internet.
Name?
Just look up either Spanish saffron or Iranian saffron, and you might even be able to get it through D'Artagnan, but I'm not positive about that. I would just Google it and say, where can I buy saffron?
Saffron also sometimes
not
people
at the store.
Well, you can buy it at the store. Sure, absolutely.
Well, giant. Oh, I crush it. I do what they say. I never get a taste.
So you may want to try a different source.
Yeah.
Also, saffron also has it's like a deep background note. It's like a color, and it's like a photograph that has a filter on it. When you use saffron, it's not an in your face. It's not like looking directly at it kind of a flavor.
Yeah. You to get a lot of flavor from saffron, you have to use a lot of it for what it is.
And if you, let's say you're making paella,
I see.
Take some of the broth that you're going to put into the paella, the stock, and steep the saffron in there. What you don't want to do is drop like the red flower pistils onto the paella and expect it to flavor it, because it won't.
No,
it needs time in the liquid, and then the liquid perfumes the paella.
Right, saffron is soluble in liquid, not in fat.
Yeah.
So you need to steep it in water, white wine, stock, whatever you're making, but you need to steep it first.
You have to crush it, right?
You don't have to crush it, but you get a lot of color and a little bit more flavor if you crush it. But you don't have to. I almost never crush mine.
If you're going to crush it, use a mortar and pestle. Don't do it on a cutting board.
Right, but just remember that the Tony just told you the most important thing. It's got to be steeped in a liquid first.
Yeah.
You can't just, like he said, you can't just like put it on top of something. It doesn't work that way.
No.
Okay, and truffles. Yeah, truffles. I don't know where you can.
Maybe Urbani. It's probably the best way to find them online and order them.
It's probably available to you.
U-R-B-A-N-I.
North Carolina, maybe.
No.
They'll be, most likely these will come from Umbria, maybe from the southwest of France. So Umbria is about...
You're talking about two of the most expensive products you can work with.
I know, but I got to taste them before I die.
If you want to have the proper...
Come to Charleston this winter. I mean, I work with them almost all winter long. So you may have to come to me about it.
If you want to have on your own very simple, perfect experience.
Yeah. I mean, I love truffles are one of my favorite products, black winter truffles.
Get a fresh black winter truffle. Slice it maybe twice the thickness of a quarter. So you have kind of like a big luxurious slice. Take a piece of baguette and toast it in the pan in butter. Get it lightly brown. While it's still warm, put that fat slice of truffle on top of there and sprinkle a little bit of like sea salt on it, a little crunchy. And
it's the best.
And take a bite of that and you'll understand a lot of things.
So Tony was telling you about a company called Urbani. It's U-R-B-A-N-I. It's out of New York. And you probably can buy some from them, but you're talking about something that's, you know, anywhere from $800, $900 to $1,500 a pound.
So, and you don't need much. I'm sure you can buy by the ounce.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Great
thanks,
call.
Dave. That's yeah.
Yeah, he hit on two of my favorite products ever.
Yeah, no question.
Oh, and they're so wonderful to work with. So you asked me about my three.
Yeah.
What about one of yours? Your first one.
Porcini. The French call them cep. Mm-hmm. The Italians call them porcini.
Mm-hmm.
And porcini, they have great flavor, and you can certainly, I mean, I love to grill slices of them.
Mm-hmm.
You roast them a bit just to get water out of them, and then you cut a nice, again, sort of like fat slice.
Yeah.
Maybe you know, if they're decent size, maybe half the width of a finger.
And they grill mark nicely. That's the cool thing about porcinis. Yeah. It's like cooking a steak. You can literally grill mark them, which is pretty.
Score them, you know, with the cross hatches with a very sharp knife.
Okay.
Salt them a little bit for a few moments before they go on. Brush them with light oil like canola. Grill them. They mark up nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that on that, and you take bread at the same time on the grill. The porcini, good olive oil.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe in a perfect world, there's a Piemontese cheese called Tuma that is a very crumbly, fatty goat cheese.
Oh, yummy.
It's pretty salty. Put a little crumble of that guy on
okay.
there.
I want that right now.
And
right now.
And you need maybe agave di gavi from a good producer like Brolia.
Wait. What was that? Gavi?
A white wine from Piemonte called gavi. People know gavi, I think, in general, who are fans of Italian wine. One of the first whites imported regularly to the U.S.
Okay.
And Cortese is the grape. And that's great with a dish like that. It loves the cheeses from Piemonte.
Mm.
So
good work.
We have another email question. Let's see. In the U.S., we tend to identify wine by varietal. This is from Donald in Essex. In countries like Italy, they tend to identify wine by place. This is a good question. Sometimes Italian wine seems so complicated in its labeling with all the names and acronyms.
Right.
I feel like I need to bring a reference guide to a wine shop with me. Is there anything I can do to simplify the process? Or do I just need to do the work on the front end to educate myself? I'll go to the end answer first. Is it work or is it a super enjoyable pastime? You know, that that there is worse work.
You mean to learn about than to learn about wine?
Than to take time and enjoy learning about Italian wine.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. When things are identified by place name, then you have to begin to learn the place, the tradition, the culture, and what all the different things in the labels mean. But take your time. I always say to people, learn one region at a time well. If you have an interest in Italian wine or French wine or any wine of any other place, learn one region. When I say region, I mean, like I mentioned, Piemonte. Learn Piemonte. Or learn even just the Val di Chiana, the part of Tuscany where the Chianti Classico zone is, where there's lots of beautiful Sangiovese. Learn a limited zone of remarkable wine first, and scale, too, from modest to very serious ones. Gain tasting experience. Read in that place. Learn so that you get sort of a lexicon of growers and vintage characteristics, you know, the grapes, the soil types, all of the different details that make it interesting,
mm-hmm.
and learn some of the history and the culture of the place. It's just like any language. You accelerate as time goes along. You know, your brain will let you leap through that second region that you learn much faster because you already understand the dynamics of what it is that makes up the details in the wines.
That's good.
But it's there's worse work you can have, Donald.
And the labels? Is there any?
You do have to look them up. You also, I mean, hopefully you're going to a place that you have well-educated, you know, a well-educated merchant or staff that
can help
you find things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and or that has references around. I mean, frankly, we always have references around because we're always teaching our guys.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Anyway, let's go to Blake in Baltimore, who's on the phone. Blake, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
So we're going to Belgium the week of Thanksgiving and skipping out on the food, turkey here, but I've never been, so wondered if you had recommendations for good restaurants in Bruges or Brussels.
I know that that's a great question. I don't think I can help you very much. I can only tell you, if wine doesn't grow there, I probably can't help you that much in finding restaurants or places to stay, because I can only get to so many places so often, and you know, I have a leading passion there.
I can't help you with that either. I haven't been there since 1985.
Take a good look, Blake, at the Michelin guide. Per capita, Belgium has more Michelin stars than any other country in Europe by 3 times.
Wow.
That's a good sign.
Those guys are no joke.
Yeah. Michelin guide in Europe is so valuable. I mean, it really will lead you in the right way.
Belgium's second to France, I would say. It's probably the most helpful as far as being really accurate and consistent.
Have a great trip. That's
the other thing to look for is not just the Michelin stars, but also when you're looking at Michelin, there are restaurants that are called Bib Gourmand, which basically means it's a deal. It's really good cooking and it's a deal. And you'll also get factoids about wine lists. If there's a specialty, or let's say that you're a Burgundy aficionado, you know, you'll find things. They'll note those things in the guide. The stars, one star. A lot of times I look for one stars because one stars are aggressively trying to get that second a lot of times. And you often have either a restaurant, there's sort of two sorts of one stars. One is a restaurant where you have a young talent who is growing fast and has been noticed, but the price has not gone crazy yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the other kind of one star that you find is one that really is a classic that they decided that and usually you get very good regional food from whether it's the chef's origin or from the place itself. And a lot of times I think that's advice I often will give is look at those ones. It's fun to go to a 2 or a 3 that, you know, that is a great treat, and then there definitely is magic available in those places. But I get a kick out of the ones. So
okay.
Have a great trip, Blake.
Thanks, Blake.
Thanks a lot.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, Jen, please hold the line. We'll get to your question. We're live. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us formanwolf@wypr.org. We have a little more mushroom talk. And then at some point is a brutal chef's challenge that I have a full box of Kleenex ready for you, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
All of that and more on Former Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And I think we can still take a few more folks. Mm-hmm. Hey, back to porcini mushrooms for a second. We're talking about mushrooms. We're talking about Italian wine.
Mm-hmm.
It's too fun. It's like the weather changed, and those are the things that are on that are on the brain right now.
Right.
About porcinis, the thing about porcinis, you can use everything. You can use the stems to make a great broth.
Oh, definitely.
A great broth or brodo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can reinforce that with, chicken necks if you want to, or you can just make it purely with the mushrooms. You'd roast
You know how many people have chicken necks laying around.
If you've got extra chicken necks, you can use them for your brodo.
Okay. Yes, right. Of course you can.
Seeing our producer
delicious.
Luke mouthing to me chicken necks. Yes, chicken necks, mister.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us had great-grandmother from the countryside. So
porcinis.
So you can make a brodo. Those brodos are amazing. A brodo like that is amazing to float little filled pastas.
Yummy.
Whether you make cannellini or ravioli or any number of the other shapes.
No, porcinis produce an incredible flavor.
Or brodo for you have a piece of tuna that's fantastic and you want to grill it.
Mm-hmm.
And serve it with some roasted porcinis, and you made a brodo for the sauce and a little good olive oil. So
awesome. Love it. Sounds good, Tony.
Let's go to Jen. Thanks for holding the line.
Hey, Jen.
Go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. How are you all?
Very
good.
Well.
How
thank
are you?
You. Hope you are.
Good. I'll go through this fast. It's Nana's pickled button.
Mm.
Button mushrooms, tarragon vinegar, safflower oil. You can substitute sunflower, olive, or grapeseed oil, but I've always used safflower. Pearl onion sliced thin, garlic cloves minced, basil leaves, fresh shallot sliced thin, fresh thyme, a little sugar, a little salt, fresh ground black pepper, some pepper sauce that you like. And I always like to add fresh tarragon as well.
That sounds like a solid recipe, Jen.
Delicious.
How do you use the mushrooms?
These are like an hors d'oeuvre, mainly as an hors d'oeuvre. You trim and blanch them, and then you rinse them in cool water. But you should use lemon juice in when you boil them really quick to keep them clean and to keep them from cooking. And then you add everything, and they're a great hors d'oeuvre. And then after you've eaten all the mushrooms, you can use whatever liquid is left over pasta or for a salad dressing or bread dip.
I was going to say, that would make a great salad dressing. That sounds good.
Well, one thing I came across was I wanted more punch in it somehow. So I have a favorite German seasoned vinegar called Salata. If you've never heard of it, I can only get it reliably at Egon Binkert.
Okay.
S-A-L-A-T-A.
Okay.
And it flies off the shelf, and it always made a big difference.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
So this
very
is
good.
For Cindy, because you love buttons.
Thank you.
That's great.
That's awesome, Jen. Thanks so much.
Welcome.
Have a good Sunday.
Pickled mushrooms made in that sort of style. You see a lot of times in the north of Italy, like up in the Valtellina.
Okay.
You'll see them served for the brazzola, the dried beef that they'll serve really, really thin.
Oh, so good.
And you'll get a little salad of pickled mushrooms and like really spicy arugula, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's pretty super. It sounds like Steve has an adventure story for us.
I can't wait to hear this, Steve.
Steve and Glen Burnie, go ahead.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I love hunting wild mushrooms, and I was up at Skyline Drive staying at Lewis Mountain, which is a mile 57 and a half. About a quarter mile from the site, I saw all this activity from bears. They were tearing up the ground, and I looked down, and there are these half-eaten mushrooms everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
So I found a few that weren't eaten by the bears and gathered them up, took them back to my campsite,
awesome.
Teed them out in my mushroom book, and it turns out they were called the fried chicken mushroom. And they were absolutely delicious, tasted just like fried chicken.
Chicken mushrooms are chicken of the woods are pretty great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, sort of like the hen of the woods or any of those. It was actually called the fried chicken mushroom. And I don't know the botanical name for it, but that's what it was. It was incredible.
What color were they?
It was a white mushroom, and it had gills.
Okay.
What I found recently, though, was pretty interesting. It's a polypore like Cordyceps. It's called the bicolored mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
And when you dry it, it has a curry scent to it.
Ooh, yum.
And I've been finding a lot of those recently, and I drive a truck for a living, and I find them when I'm stopped at red lights.
Wow.
I look down, and there they are.
Oh, my gosh. That's so cool.
You probably shouldn't
You're
drive
awesome.
The truck off the road,
Oh, my God.
Steve.
You're awesome, Steve. I just, first of all, I just admire you for grabbing mushrooms off the ground after a bear was eating them. I'm like, this is the best story ever.
I mean, did you wait for the bears to clear out or you'd make friends or what?
Did you say, hey, buddy, get out of here,
hiking,
you bear.
They clear out. They don't really like to see people, you know, when they're in the wild.
Okay.
So, but it was fresh digging. I mean, they were right there, so.
That's so cool.
I guess I stole their lunch.
You're awesome. Thank
that's
you,
great.
Steve.
Sure.
That's great.
All bye-bye. Right.
Thanks.
Wow.
Yeah, chicken of the woods, I know. I mean, hen of the woods are maitakes. Chicken of the woods are those sort of like orange, yellow mushrooms.
I didn't know they were white, too. That's awesome. Good story.
That's cool. Let's take the call from Fabian in Baltimore. Fabian, go ahead.
Hello, Cindy. I was wondering what your take is on shiitake mushrooms, since they're primarily used in Asian cuisine and they have a very strong flavor. And my second question is your approach to dried versus fresh. When you rehydrate, do you add salt? Do you add tamari or anything special to it, or just go right in with water?
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Fabian. I love shiitakes. And, you know, it's a funny thing. The shiitakes, Tony, were, you know, you remember, they were really big in the
80s. Oh, that was a big 80s thing.
Ooh, shiitakes and portobello mushrooms. And just talking about this on the show, I was thinking I should buy some because I literally haven't worked with them in a very long time. I love shiitake mushrooms. And talk about caramelization. Those things, when they're caramelized, oh my gosh, with lentils and duck, it's a perfect dish. I love them, love them, love them. I'm going to buy some shiitakes.
In about 1986, we used to do pompano and papillotes.
Oh, yeah.
With cabbage and beet greens and shiitake mushrooms.
Oh, gosh, that sounds good.
And they got an amazing perfume from the shiitakes.
Yeah, I think one of the first I ate in a restaurant when I was a kid in Chicago, and the chef was a woman, which was very unusual. And it was the first time I ever had shiitake mushrooms, and they were served with lentils. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing. He also asked about what to reconstitute dried mushrooms in. Absolutely, just water.
Water, I was going to say, or like a neutral stock, white chicken stock.
You can, but you don't have to. So, yeah.
We've got to get the chef's challenge.
All right,
and I want to make sure
Tony.
That you know.
No, you're going first.
I made a beautiful, easy, fun, relaxing one for you.
Go ahead, Tony.
That you can do in 28 seconds. I don't even have my glasses on.
You know I can do it in 28 seconds. Yours is going
to
take a little longer.
No, I'm shocked. Give me all kinds of weird stuff. No cookies, though. I would eat some cookies. Venison, pumpkin, sweet potato, onion, shallot, cinnamon, nutmeg, cinnamon stick. Sorry, I'm like nutmeg stick. What the? Star anise, juniper, rosemary. So you'd give me a whole bunch of pumpkin conducive spices.
Yes.
To make a puree with, obviously. Then I will. Actually, you give me apples and pears, chicken and veal stock, butter and cream. So clearly, I need to make a puree. You give me apple cider that I'll reduce into a sauce. And I'm going to make almost like a little sweet onion and shallot. Use a little bit of the butter to cook those guys very slowly and turn them almost into like a pudding. And maybe that's what needs the juniper. So it has a little bit more of a savory accent on the apples. And the pears, I'm just going to eat the pears. I love pears. And the pears are done locally.
It's cheating, Tony.
It is definitely cheating. The sweet potatoes, I'm going to cut into batonet, and I'm going to fry those guys. And the venison, I'm going to roast it in a pan. Roll it around. I don't know what cut you're giving me, but...
Loin.
Yeah. I'm going to roll it around in a pan, season it well with salt, rest it.
Mm-hmm. And get make nice little, caramelized. Yeah,
two things you didn't give me, olive oil and rosemary.
Sure.
I'm going to muddle those together and slice it nice and thin and season it with the oil. So there you go.
All right, cool. Eggs, butter, baguette, shallot, girole, red wine vinegar, black pepper, blue Italian plums, beet greens, hazelnut oil, extra virgin olive oil, manchego cheese, and cream. That's easy. I'm going to make scrambled eggs, which if you cook them very, very slowly on low heat and really move them around in the pan, they'll just break into tiny little pieces and it'll be so good. I'll saute the girole with a shallot, and I'm going to add a little bit of cream to it since you gave it to me, and just like a tablespoon right at the very end. I'll finish that with just like a drop of the red wine vinegar and a little bit of black pepper and serve that with the eggs. That's going to be so good on top. And then with the baby beet greens, I'm going to make a salad with the blue Italian plums, make a vinaigrette with the red wine vinegar. Again, use that black pepper, the hazelnuts. I'll roast those and toast them a little bit. Add the hazelnut oil and garnish with manchego cheese. And that was easy. And oh my gosh, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, I thought that might
Could
be.
Could I talk faster?
I told you it was luxurious.
I did live
and
in
easy.
Indiana part of my life. All right. Yes. Okay. That was fun.
Yeah. No, that's
super quick chef's challenge.
Those are kinder okay. chef's challenges than we typically will run through.
Right. So, we have to talk a little bit more about Italian wine. So,
absolutely, I can't believe I didn't bring some in to start.
Oh, that would have been fun.
That's Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, next time, Tony.
Yeah, next time time we're live, we'll bring some in. We'll see just how relaxed
how well,
Cindy can be on the air.
How well the show goes. Chef challenge is no challenge at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, favorite Italian wine. Ha. I know you can't answer that.
There's no one thing.
I know you can't do that, but
I mean, it's
all right, just something you're excited about. I gave you venison. What Italian wine would you put with that venison?
Ooh, you can do a lot of things with that. There's a producer in Umbria. It's funny. There are people who are winemakers that I would think of. I sort of have a nickname for them, wizards. Those people that can do things that don't make sense and qualitatively come up with something that is clearly magic.
Sure.
Hence the name.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those growers is a producer named Paolo Bea, B-E-A, in Umbria. If you get a second, look him up. He makes a number of different bottlings, Sangiovese-based things, not the Sagrantino, which is probably the more famous grape from Umbria, but really big-bodied, very layered, extremely aromatic, super interesting. Something from Paolo Bea would be fantastic with a venison dish. There's not a huge amount of tannin. There's a good acid backbone. And there's enough sort of exotic notes to the aromatics of those wines that it'll handle the spices with the puree.
How about this? If you were having, it's fall now. So if you were having a quick little party, what would you start off with for an Italian aperitivo or whatever?
I mean, I had mentioned Gavi, but Gavi is really for food. So it really depends on, if you want it for food or not. That's one of the questions. If it's just white wine for drinking, look in the Alto Adige. There's a grape called Kerner. Kerner is a cross between Schiava, which is a red grape, and Riesling, a white grape. It has some of that fruity charm of Riesling, but it has some of the spice and the body from the Schiava, and it's a white.
That'd be fun.
But that is pretty rich and fruity, but dry and clean, as all the whites are from the Alto Adige. And Kerner is really interesting. I really know no one who's not charmed by Kerner.
Okay, good.
So that might be
Thanks.
A good start.
Awesome.
And that's all we have time for. You can still reach us via email during the week, formanwolf@wipr.org. If you want to listen to this episode or any other podcast from us, go to the WYPR website, wypr.org. Find the Foreman Wolf page and download away. If you want to reach us via social
media, Chef Wolf on Instagram and Chef Cindy Wolf on Twitter.
I'm the real Tony Foreman on Instagram. Have a great Sunday.
Happy Sunday.